out, everybody.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Lights Out, baby. I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm your host, Austin.
And I'm the producer, Daniel.
And we got an evil woman for you today. A real, real one.
Yeah.
A real witch, supposedly, a witch, too. Yeah. This is the case of Irenia Kottner and her group of Walmart witches. She created a coven with some of her employees at the local Walmart.
Yeah, they all kind of met there. Most of them, at least. I think only one wasn't from there. But yeah, they started like hanging out. And then all of a sudden, one thing led to another. And here we are.
Irenia just, you know, took the lead.
Yeah.
Of like, I'm this powerful witch.
I'm your leader now.
Yeah, I'm your leader. You will do as I say. It's one of those cases where, you know, somebody's able to manipulate a bunch of other people into doing her evil bidding.
Yeah.
For honestly one of the just weakest, strangest reasons. It's
petty.
It's very petty at the end of the day. But this is the story of Irenia Kottner and her Walmart coven and how they took things way too far and people died that did not need to die whatsoever. Yeah. There's no reason for it. But things quickly spiraled out of control. So, with that being said, let us begin. In the early morning hours of August 23rd, 2005, Richland County Sheriff's Deputy Robert Blythe was dispatched to a home in Claremont, Illinois. Richland County is mostly farmland and rural, with a few small communities throughout. It's known as a friendly area where, you know, everybody knows each other. It's very friendly neighborhoods, that sort of thing. And around 3 a.m., Deputy Blythe was nearing the end of his shift when he got a radio call from his dispatcher. The dispatcher said she had just gotten a frantic call with a lot of screaming over the line, and she could only understand a few details about what was actually going on. She did understand that someone had been shot and another had been stabbed. So Deputy Blythe rushed over to the home where he found a pregnant woman outside screaming at him. She explained that people had been shot and stabbed inside of the home. Deputy Blythe cautiously approached the house, and once inside, he saw an injured man lying on the floor on his back. The floor was also covered in blood. He had been shot in the abdomen and been trying to scoot himself towards the exterior door. Deputy Blythe then spotted someone he recognized, 23-year-old Jackie Johnson, who he knew from just being familiar with the town. Jackie was clearly in shock when he looked at Deputy Blythe and said, "Robbie, I shot him." The screaming woman outside turned out to be Jackie's 17-year-old pregnant girlfriend, Lindsay Cassinger. Former Illinois State Police Sergeant Kelly Henby said this, "There's very few murders in this area where you walk in and you've got so many people injured and you're just trying to figure out who's the bad guys and who's the good guys." Deputy Blythe then radioed for paramedics to immediately come to the home. Although considering the amount of blood loss he was seeing, he figured there was a small chance the man with the gunshot wound could survive. Deputy Blythe then found another male victim. He was inside the kitchen on the floor, bleeding from a chest wound. A knife was lying on the floor beside him. He had suffered multiple stab wounds. Inside the utility room in the house, another victim was found, a woman with numerous stomach and neck wounds, crying out in pain. And while waiting for the paramedics, Deputy Blythe asked Jackie Jackson, "What happened here?" And Jackie explained that the man he shot was an intruder who attacked the other two victims, who were mother and son, Jacqueline and Joshua Bennett. Jacqueline was the live-in girlfriend of Jackie's father, Lee, and some report they were engaged, and Jackie saw Josh as his quote-unquote stepbrother. Jackie told police that he had no idea why the men broke into the home and attacked them. So just a chaotic scene.
Yeah. And isn't this is the most terrifying scenario that we think about,
yes,
that we kind of fear, is just intruders that we don't know for no reason, seemingly no reason, entering your home and attacking.
Just stabbing.
Yeah.
Everybody.
This is terrifying. So when the detectives arrived, Jackie Jackson was still shaken by the attack, obviously, but he was fully cooperative with police, and he said the home belonged to his father, Lee, who was at work at the time. And then Jacqueline Bennett also lived in the home with them, and Josh Bennett had come by for dinner the previous evening to visit his mother. Jackie Jackson and his girlfriend, Lindsay Cassinger, had been sleeping in the basement that night when they heard the commotion upstairs. Jackie then heard Josh yelling for help. According to Jackie, he told Lindsay to go run over to the neighbor's house before he headed upstairs with a loaded 12-gauge shotgun. Once he got up there, he immediately saw two men in black clothing and ski masks. One of the masked men was stabbing Josh Bennett in the chest and abdomen. Jackie then struck one of the intruders in the face with the butt of his shotgun, and it was enough to get the man off of Josh, who was lying on the ground. One of the men then tried to pepper spray Jackie, but it had no effect on him. The other intruder grabbed the shotgun barrel that he was holding and tried to wrestle the gun away from him, and then Jackie pulled the trigger and shot the intruder in the abdomen. He then dropped the gun in a panic and began wrestling the other intruder, who was wielding a knife. During this commotion, Jackie had gotten a hold of the knife and then stabbed the man in his right inner thigh before throwing him down a few basement stairs. This intruder then fled the home while the other remained on the floor, bleeding out from the shotgun wound. Meanwhile, Lindsay had run over to the neighbor's house and they called 911. The neighbor witnessed the one intruder fleeing the home and into the cornfield nearby, but they lost sight of him. When police later tried to question Lindsay, she was still frantic and just could not calm down, so police didn't press her then. Knowing that one intruder was still on the loose, authorities immediately put out an APB for the wounded attacker. They obviously knew he had a wound in his right thigh. Since he was wearing a mask, Jackie unfortunately could not identify him or describe his features, but Sheriff's Deputy Robert Blythe had his guys call every single hospital in the area, and they told them all to be on the lookout for a man with a knife wound to his inner right thigh. Once paramedics arrived at the home, Jacqueline and the intruder were still alive, but they were in critical condition. If you remember, Jacqueline was the woman in the utility room who had suffered some stab wounds. 20-year-old Joshua unfortunately died from blood loss from a stab wound to his heart, and he was pronounced dead at 4:15 a.m.
So we're going to dive into a little bit more about who these people are, starting with one of the victims that we just mentioned, Joshua Bennett. So Joshua Thomas Bennett, who went by Josh, was born in 1985 in Mattoon, Illinois, which is a small town surrounded by woods, prairies, and groves. It's about a three-hour drive south of Chicago. Josh's parents are Jacqueline and Jerry Bennett, and they got divorced in the 90s. Josh had one older brother named Jake, and after the divorce, Josh spent most of his upbringing with his father, Jerry. He loved growing up with his dad, where he had more stability, and they grew close over the years. In Mattoon, Jerry and Josh had fun living in an apartment together, while Jerry worked as a mail carrier and Josh went to school. Josh loved swimming at the beach or in a river, and he loved spending time with his dad. Meanwhile, Josh's relationship with his mother, Jacqueline, had weakened over time, and he still saw her every chance he got once in a while, but he wasn't as close with her as he was before. At Mattoon High School, Josh was in the junior ROTC program. After graduating in 2004, he wanted to join the military near the height of the Iraq War. He had only been familiar with his small town of Mattoon, and he felt like it was a great opportunity for him to go out and see the world by enlisting in the military. So he followed his father's footsteps. Jerry had served in the U.S. Army during the Vietnam War, and so Josh enlisted. Josh's family was very proud of him when he finished Army basic training in July 2005 at 20 years old. Around this time, he also found a hobby in driving motorcycles, and he was later stationed in Fort Polk, Louisiana, serving with the U.S. Army Delta Company. He worked in the Army kitchen because he loved to cook. He was about to be deployed to Iraq in a few weeks when his father suddenly died of a heart attack on July 19, 2005 at 52 years old. Since Josh was in the field at this time, his family and friends couldn't reach out to him, so he heard the news through his military unit. Josh was devastated by the loss of his father since they were so close. The following day, he flew back to his hometown of Mattoon, Illinois. While back in town, friends and family suggested that he reconnect with his mother, Jacqueline. He had shown no interest before, but he ended up reconsidering because of his father's passing. Josh's girlfriend had often joined him when going to Jacqueline's home in Claremont, Illinois, which is about an hour and a half drive south of Mattoon. But on August 22, 2005, she decided not to go. Josh and his girlfriend Jamie Hopper Talbert talked on the phone that evening. He mentioned they were about to eat dinner, and his girlfriend assumed they would talk the following day, not realizing it was unfortunately going to be the last time that she would ever speak to him.
So back at the house after the attacks, Jacqueline and the unidentified attacker were placed in separate ambulances and were driven to the local hospital, while detectives tried to quickly identify the hospitalized intruder. State Police Sergeant Kelly Henby had followed the ambulance with the intruder in it, and knowing that the abdomen wound could be fatal, I mean, getting shot with a shotgun in the abdomen,
it's pretty serious.
Yeah. I don't know who really can survive that. So he knew that time was against him, and he needed to try and get any information he could out of the suspect. Moments before the man slipped into a coma, he actually identified himself as 29-year-old David A. Lindner. When they asked who his partner was, all he said was Ricky. And when Sergeant Henby pressed him on the situation, David claimed that the woman they attacked in the home had placed a hex on them, so they had to kill her. The man then fell into a coma soon after giving this statement to police. After hearing about this hex, many of the investigators were in utter disbelief. I mean, can you imagine that this random act
home
of
invasion.
Violence
happens,
and then you hear the one guy before falling into a coma say that there was a hex placed?
Yeah.
Insane.
Especially out here in rural America.
Yeah, in the middle of nowhere.
They're going to be like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Very strange.
So this case, as you can imagine, was nothing like the police had ever seen in this area. With one suspect in a coma, they needed to find that other suspect if they had any chance of understanding why the Bennetts were attacked. A massive manhunt had begun for the man named Ricky with a stab wound in his leg. That's all they had to go on. Police notified residents using the local radio station. They informed them that a massive manhunt was underway and residents needed to stay inside and lock their doors. Investigators then went to find Jacqueline for an interview in that same hospital. They found her in the hospital in serious but stable condition, fortunately. The first thing they did was inform her of her son's death, which, as you can imagine, I mean, that absolutely devastated her. But she did end up giving a statement to the police. Her boyfriend, Lee Jackson, was at work that night. She woke up and went into the kitchen where she was approached by the two intruders. They immediately attacked her and stabbed her 3 times in the abdomen. Josh then must have heard his mother in distress in the kitchen, so he ran out into the kitchen and charged at the two men to defend her. He was actually able to come between his mother and the intruders, but they fatally stabbed him in the chest. His intervention saved his mother Jacqueline's life, and he gave her enough time to move away from them. While, if you recall, Jackie was then headed upstairs with the 12-gauge shotgun from the basement. And when police asked Jacqueline if she had any knowledge of witchcraft or a hex, she was just as confused as the police. She had no idea what the hell they were talking about. When they asked about her boyfriend Lee, you know, she reiterated he was at work all night and early morning, and they even confirmed with his work that he was there the whole time. So Lee was ruled out as a suspect. He was the only one who lived at the home who was not at the home, so obviously they were looking at him first, but they cleared him. As investigators met back up at the police station, their APB to local hospitals about the man with the knife wound actually paid off. This is very quickly. Within hours of the attack, Lawrence County Memorial Hospital contacted the police station and reported a patient with a stab wound in his right inner thigh, exactly what the APB had stated. The patient was 38-year-old Oscar Richard Eck, and he refused to tell hospital staff how he got the wound. So Oscar Richard Eck, his middle name Richard, all they had to go on, if you remember, was Ricky.
So they want to figure out who this Oscar guy is. State Police Sergeant John Waggle went over to the hospital to interview Oscar. And when he arrived, he found a man limping out of the hospital into the parking lot trying to leave.
Yeah.
Because he probably knew that they were coming. Yeah. Sergeant Waggle asked him for identification and the man complied. He identified the man as Oscar Richard Eck. Oscar said he could call him Ricky. So there you go. They're like, boom, this is our guy.
Yeah.
Oscar said he was just getting some fresh air, but was planning to go back inside.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. He then raised up his pant leg to show Sergeant Waggle his blood-soaked bandage on his thigh. Blood began running down his leg onto a sock, and when Sergeant asked about the injury, Oscar said he had gotten it from an accident while doing some drywall work.
Sure, buddy.
Because that makes a ton of sense. Obviously, Sergeant Waggle's not an idiot, and he knows exactly what's going on here. While interviewing Oscar, two women walked up to them, 20-year-old Jennifer Wolf, who went by Jenny, and 34-year-old Irenia Lamb Cotner. The two had planned to pick up Oscar from the hospital. According to Sergeant Waggle, Irenia was acting odd and nervous. She was visibly shaking and would not make eye contact, just staring at the ground. So, as most police officers are, they have this instinct, they have the experience to know that this is sketchy. Are these people possibly involved? Oscar then returned to the hospital under police watch and was treated for his wound. Meanwhile, officers asked Jenny and Irenia to come to the police station for some questioning, and they cooperated. What was odd was that Irenia never asked why the police were at the hospital, why they were interviewing Oscar, or what was going on in general.
Wouldn't that be the first thing? Like, let's say you were going to pick up someone from the hospital. They're stopped in the parking lot. And a
cops
police officer is
talking.
I would be like, what's going on?
What's this about?
Not a single question.
Sure, I'll come with you. Yeah, let's talk.
Yeah, it's so obvious.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not asking questions, you obviously look like you know what's really going on here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So immediately she becomes suspicious to police. While at the station, neither of the women claimed to know about the murder of Josh Bennett. But Irenia continued to behave oddly. She appeared disheveled and nervous, and she wouldn't tell the officers a thing. With nothing to go on at this point, officers had to let both women go. Police then ran a background check on Oscar Eck. There was no prior offenses that came up, but they were able to get his last known address, and so they went to visit that property.
When they arrived to Oscar's residence, a woman at the property identified herself as Oscar's roommate, and this was 22-year-old Misty Gangloff. According to court documents, her relationship with Oscar was completely platonic, and they worked together at Walmart. They were not in a romantic relationship together. She allowed investigators into the property, where they questioned her about the attack inside the house in Claremont, and she said she didn't know anything about what was going on. The more they interviewed her, though, the more they looked around her home, and Sergeant John Waggle actually spotted books on witchcraft. He saw some candles and also what looked like a voodoo doll. Considering that a hex was mentioned, the investigators couldn't ignore this. Why would you?
Yeah, I mean, this was good police work.
Right, yeah. Easy dots to connect.
He said the motive was because someone put a hex on them. Wait, we're in this house. There's all this, you know, Wicca books, witchcraft books, there's a voodoo doll.
And he was a dying man who told you this information, so there's no reason to think that he was lying, right?
If you're tired of watching your money drain from your bank account with no rhyme or reason, then you need to stop what you're doing and you need to go to rocketmoney.com/lightsout, because Rocket Money is going to help you get your finances rocketing to space and beyond. I'm telling you, Austin and I love Rocket Money. We both use it personally. I use it every single day. It's one of the first apps I open in the morning because there's just something about getting an overall picture of your financial, you know, situation. And also, you know, maybe you went out on the weekend, you know, did a bunch of stuff, go have some drinks, or you go to a theme park and really watch your money drain from your wallet. And not only that, there's so many damn subscriptions these days. It's insane. I think the average for people is like 17 or something insane like that.
Oh man, yeah.
A recent report came out. So
whoa,
you need a way to easily manage that, keep track of it to make sure you're not paying for subscriptions you don't need anymore. And that's what Rocket Money does best. It goes through your account, finds all your subscriptions, it lists them out, and with a few taps, you can even have them go and cancel some of those subscriptions for you, which is really nice, really easy. And they have so many other features. They've got credit monitoring with the premium version of Rocket Money. They've got asset tracking. They've got all sorts of alerts and personal budgeting that you can set up on it. It really is the one-stop app for all things finance. You need to start using it. Trust us. You will save money. On average, people are saving at least $200. But there's many users who have saved over $700 by just using the app's features, which is pretty incredible. So cancel your unwanted subscriptions and reach your financial goals faster with Rocket Money. Just go to rocketmoney.com/lightsout today.
That's rocketmoney.com/lightsout. rocketmoney.com/lightsout. So the police immediately asked Misty to come back to the station with them for questioning, and she agreed. While there, she quickly admitted that she did know Jenny Wolf and Irenia Cotner. those were the two women that were at the hospital to pick up Oscar Echt. She had known them for about 4 years since they all worked at the same Walmart together. And they all became friends and shared an interest in the occult. Misty became interested in Wicca around 2000 or 2001. Reportedly, at first, the women were only interested in good luck charms and cleansing rituals, nothing too serious. It was mostly Misty and Jenny who were doing this type of Wicca together. It was pretty casual. Misty was interested in earth, like herbs, flowers, and crystals. They would hold candlelit rituals, try to rid themselves of things like negative energies or hexes. And this made them bond closely over the years, especially the two of them, Jenny and Misty. According to Misty, Irenia was the leader of their witch coven. She was the oldest of the group by far. She was 34, and she kind of realized she could manipulate Misty and Jenny, who were in their early 20s. She had become close with Jenny, who was the youngest in the group, and Jenny had come from a pretty rough home, and Irenia took her in as kind of her own daughter. The two of them lived together, and while Jenny was looking for a sense of family and community, she quickly came to see Irenia as this type of mother figure. Not only was she a mother figure, she also kind of became Jenny's hero. She really looked up to her more than anyone else. And according to Misty, she was initially just friends with Jenny, but Irenia often, she liked to keep an eye on what was going on. She was maybe a bit of a control freak, and she kind of intruded into Jenny and Misty's friendship there. At first, Misty saw Irenia as, quote, dumb as a box of rocks. And she seemed desperate to be involved in kind of this little witch coven that they had. Irenia was also the one who wanted to form this official coven in the first place, even though Misty said that she was pretty apprehensive about it since she kind of preferred to practice Wicca mostly alone. But she went along with it only so she wouldn't lose this friendship that she had built with her good friend Jenny.
Yeah, which is like completely harmless, yeah. Right? Like it's just a group of women.
Yeah. You know what it kind of reminds me of too is kind of like playground stuff where like say you and I are on the playground just hanging out. We're doing our thing. We get interested in a hobby.
Right.
We start the whatever. We're Club into Pokemon or cards or something. And then Daniel comes in and he's like, he's got like 600 Pokemon cards. And he's like, I'm going to run this show now. It kind of takes over the friendship group. That's kind of how I see what's happening here.
Yeah, I can just see this playing out at Walmart.
Yeah.
I don't know why, like in the Walmart break room.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're like sitting at like one of the tables and they're talking about, you know, Wicca and like the different rituals that they're going to do. Like, hey, did you know the full moon's tonight?
Yep.
You got everything you need for your full moon ritual?
Yep. And then Irenia barges in.
Yeah, she's like, hey, guys, why are you talking about this without me?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It's going to be at my house, guys. Yeah. Yeah, it's totally that very sort much. Of thing going on. So it starts off very, very, you know, innocent and just, you know, everybody's just practicing their Wicca.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. But as the years went on, their occult rituals and ceremonies really took a turn. Because according to Misty, in the spring of 2005, Irenia told the coven that a death hex had been put on her.
So dramatic.
Somebody's put a death hex on me.
Yeah, crazy.
And so this was a very serious matter. They met 15 times after this, and Irenia constantly brought up the hex. She's convinced somebody's out to get her. And it got to the point where she complained about it every time they met up, which would get pretty annoying. Misty finally began to believe her when Irenia's dogs began to die mysteriously, which I could kind of see that, right? Like, I can see if you're into this, you're thinking somebody's put a hex on her and her dog, she's coming, you'd be like, guys, I don't know what's going on with my dogs. They're just getting sick. I'm worried that they're going to die. You might start actually believing somebody did put a hex on
them. That's really traumatic, too, to have a pet like that die all of a sudden.
Right. But are they dying from some black magic, or are they dying because her dogs are being poisoned? And that's kind of what they suspected, that the dogs were being poisoned. But Misty believed that the hex on Irenia was affecting things, her dogs, and people around her. Because that's kind of the idea behind a hex or a curse, is that it bleeds into everything else
in life.
Misty also suffered from bouts of depression and migraine headaches since she was 18, so she often wore
like red-tinted sunglasses to tone down the intensity of her migraines, and she told police she had used the voodoo doll that they had seen as an effigy of herself in order to try to release her tension and pain from her migraines, but she said it really didn't do anything. Because obviously, she's worried that they're going to think she might be involved in this because why does she have this voodoo doll? And like, based on probably the police's understanding, it's based off of what they've seen in a movie or in a book or something.
It's like you use this to harm somebody.
Right, you're putting the needles in. And
Indiana Jones Temple of Doom style. Yeah. He's getting hit in the back with it.
Exactly. But Irenia then gave her some protection bags with herbs to try to relieve her pain. But this didn't work either. Eventually, she convinced Misty that these afflictions must have been a result of the hex. So now she's convinced Misty that your migraines, this medical condition that you have, are directly connected to the hex that's been placed on me and essentially our coven.
Right.
Right?
That's the logic. Yep.
So they tried several things to break the hex, including jumping over broomsticks,
all right,
spreading chamomile, burning sage, but nothing worked. They used a candle to confirm that the hex was still in place by some candle reading.
I've never heard of the jumping over broomsticks thing. That was new to me. I didn't know what that was. Spreading chamomile, burning sage, using herbs, earthy things like that, I've heard before. But have you ever heard of the
I haven't heard of Wiccans doing that, but I mean, if you look up how to remove a hex or a curse from you, you'll find
a slew
80,000 different ways and different spells and rituals that everybody says, you know, might work.
So that was probably just one of the random suggestions.
Yeah, exactly. There. They're just kind of trying anything and everything. But Irene at this point was very convincing to Misty. She was also controlling and manipulative, and she was able to get Jenny and Misty on board the idea that this hex was a sole negative presence in their lives. And that it's essentially getting worse too.
Yeah.
I wonder if she convinced them that if we don't do something about this, it could kill us. It could get really, really bad. So
I think that's the idea.
Need to kind of like scare them into really thinking we need to do whatever it takes in order to rid ourselves of this hex.
Yeah.
And once they were fully convinced, Irenia told them she believed the hex had been placed on them by another powerful witch, and she claimed that this very powerful witch was 17-year-old Lindsay Cassinger, which again, if you remember, is the pregnant girlfriend of Jackie Jackson. So a 17-year-old has done this to them. The motives of the attack became clearer when Misty revealed to the police that back in 2000, Irenia fell in love with Jackie Jackson.
Here it is.
Oh, Jackie was 18 or 19 when they met, and Irenia was about 29 or 30. And apparently a passionate relationship developed over the next 4 years, but ultimately ended in November 2004. So there you go. Motive.
We have a clear motive. Irenia was devastated by the breakup, and she was furious when she found out that Jackie had broken up with her to be with Lindsay. On top of this, she was absolutely enraged and filled with jealousy when she discovered that Lindsay was pregnant soon after they had begun dating. It wasn't a coincidence that this happened around the exact same time Irenia began complaining of the hex that was put upon her. This was also when Irenia brought Oscar Eck, Misty's platonic roommate and another Walmart employee, into the coven. Reportedly, Oscar wanted to join Irenia's coven because he was inspired by the Harry Potter movies.
Love that.
Yeah, these people don't seem like the smartest bunch here, but he was looking for a magical experience, and Irenia soon convinced Oscar that Lindsay had placed a hex on him as well. Once she had all the members of the coven convinced of Lindsay's death hex, Irenia told them she knew a way to cleanse the hex once and for all. She told them that they would have to kill Lindsay and her unborn child. According to Misty, she and the other two women drove to Lindsay's house about 8 to 10 times and watched it from the nearby cornfield. Here they would actually trade ideas of how to murder Lindsay. So this is diabolical.
Yeah. We're going to stalk this poor family.
Yeah.
And then talk about how we're going to murder them.
Right. Based on a massive lie that's fueled by just jealousy and hatred.
Yeah.
Irenia once told Jenny to put firecrackers into the gas tank of Lindsay's car, thinking it would blow up when she started the engine. Yeah. These people are morons.
Yeah.
She once also met Irenia and Jenny on the outskirts of town, where they fired a pistol through a pillow and milk jug to silence it. So they're really...
What?
I know, right? It's like what you see in the movies where it's like, ooh, you can silence a shot through a pillow or a milk jug. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
We like tape the jug to the end. Ridiculous. It also goes to show that they are seriously considering murder here, all of them.
And they're trying to figure out how to hide it, cover it up, you know, and make it
like an assassination.
Totally.
Yeah.
They're Googling how to assassinate somebody without getting caught.
Right.
Or in subtle ways.
I know.
Firecrackers in a gas tank.
Could you imagine? There was no coverage on this of like any court documents or anything that I can find, but I can only imagine that their Google search histories were
riddled with
incriminating
stuff.
Yeah.
Over the years here on Lights Out, Austin and I have tried a lot of different meal kits, and it's safe to say that Hungry Root is our favorite.
It's the best one.
It really is.
Hands down.
In every way, too. There's so many great things about Hungry Root. I actually pay for the Hungry Root subscription because I love the service so much, and the food is absolutely delicious. I think both of us notice food quality much higher.
Way higher. And also the convenience of cooking the meals. It's way easier than so many other meal kits.
Yes. Their meals are literally 15 minutes or less. Like last night, I made a steak Caesar salad.
Ooh, yum.
The steaks were pre-cooked, sous vide.
Yeah.
Tender still. Perfect medium rare. All I had to do was heat them up. I think I just threw them on the pan for just give them a nice little quick sear on either side. Warm it up a bit.
Yeah.
Slice it up. And then it's literally just a pre-made Caesar salad kit. You throw it in a bowl.
All the dressings there.
Done.
Yeah.
But what's also great about Hungry Root that we love is that with their recipes, you can actually go into it and remove ingredients or add ingredients to it.
Right. I love to customize. That's one of my big things.
So if you want to add a protein to something, or maybe there's recipes that have hella onions in it, and I don't want onions. So I'm like, take that out. I don't want onions in that. Don't even send me an
onion. You're not an onion guy?
No, I hate onions.
Really? Wow.
But no, we love Hungry Root. It's a great value. It saves you so much time from having to go shop at the store. You can get groceries there as well. So you can get snacks, which they have tons of great snacks.
Snacks are bomb.
They're healthy. They don't have a bunch of nasty preservatives, high fructose corn syrup, artificial sweeteners. It's healthy. All their meats and seafoods are high quality. What's not to love? They have tons of trusted brands like Oatly, Vital Farms, Ithaca Hummus, Harmless Harvest, and there's so many more. So you get a lot of brands you've never seen before.
Yeah.
And you're like, damn, this is good stuff.
And if you got some kiddies that are going back to school, apparently this is a really good time.
Yes, they got good kid snacks.
Yeah, good
and
kid
lunches.
Snacks, man. And it's like you're going to be, I don't know, kind of busy with the kids back in school. So
make it simple.
Yeah, make it simple.
Let Hungry Root take care of your kids' lunches this year. They've got a wide variety of different things your kids are going to love that are high-quality ingredients, and they're just super easy to throw into the lunch boxes. So take advantage of this exclusive offer we're giving you guys. For a limited time, you get 40% off your first box, plus get a free item in every box for life. I mean, what a deal. You just go to hungryroot.com/lightsout and use code lightsout. That's hungryroot.com/lightsout, code lightsout to get 40% off your first box and that free item in your box for life.
Hungryroot.com/lightsout, code lightsout. So as the information surrounding the case unfolded, one of the big questions left to police was this: if Lindsay was the target, why was she the only one really not attacked on the night of August 23rd? Because if you remember, only Josh Bennett and his mother, Jacqueline, had been attacked, and Josh actually died. So if the target was Lindsay, what the hell happened? Police then brought Oscar Eck in for questioning, and he was very cooperative with the police and admitted that Irenia had convinced him of this hex. She had made it seem like the hex was threatening not only them, but then it could harm their loved ones as well. Oscar and Jenny were outsiders. I think they were generally lonely people. They were looking for kind of a sense of community. Irenia had given them a place where they felt like they belonged. And not only that, Irenia really gave them a place where they felt like they actually mattered and that they could make a difference. And once she knew she could manipulate them like this, she sold them on this idea of murder. Over time, Misty began seeing how problematic Irenia and her plan were. She began distancing herself from the coven, but Jenny and Oscar were still pretty much under Irenia's thumb. Once fully convinced, Oscar agreed to kill Lindsay with the help of Jenny and Irenia. According to Oscar, on one night, they arrived at Lindsay's home, which was the same home which is owned by Lee Jackson. They had a gun and a knife with them. Irenia handed Jenny the gun, but when the time came, Jenny couldn't get herself to even approach the front door of the home. She was far too scared, so they just bailed on the plan entirely. Irenia was so upset with Jenny after this and her failure to follow through that she took away the magic salt that she had gifted Jenny. Jenny actually believed that these salts had healing properties and cleansing properties, and this act was really humiliating to her, especially because she had looked up to Irenia so fondly. So she was quite devastated after this.
Misty told police that sometime after this event, she didn't have anything to do with the coven, although she still came across him at work and still lived with Oscar. Irenia then changed the game plan for the murder, seeing as they needed another person to replace Jenny because Jenny wasn't up to it. She reached out to a man she knew through Oscar, who was 29-year-old David Lindner. David was a big talker who had recently moved into town from Missouri, and he considered himself a warlock and claimed to have served in the military. Irenia quickly hired him as a gun for hire. And on the night of August 22, 2005, Irenia invited Oscar and David over to her place while Jenny was at work. And they held one last seance where she told them they could ask any questions they wanted. Irenia carved Lindsay's name and baby into two separate candles. According to one source, she could interpret the flickering of the candle flames as a response, either yes or no. And the candle told Irenia that this was the night they had to remove the hex and kill Lindsay.
This screams manipulation.
Oh my right? God.
Like,
yeah.
Like, you're reading the flickering of the candles and translating it? Come on.
What is that based on?
Right. Nothing.
According to another source, David conducted and led the seance. Reportedly, he spoke with God and Satan, who confirmed he was now part of the death hex and confirmed that they in fact needed to kill Lindsay. Then they would take Lindsay's bra to an open road and cast a certain spell that would put an end to the hex. Which, who knows where they're even getting of this? And right. Irenia is like, yeah, just this is just a bunch of nonsense. They are literally in Harry Potter land right now. Yeah. According to Oscar, Irenia gave them detailed instructions on how to stab Lindsay and her unborn child in a ritual sacrifice. She also mentioned that they had to kill her within a short time frame. The deal was that they had to execute the murder before her candles burned out for this all to work. And if Oscar and David couldn't murder Lindsay before that, they would be quote unquote taken.
Taken.
Whatever that means.
Yeah.
Taken straight to hell. It was understood that this meant that something terrible would happen to them and possibly their families. As for Irenia, she told them that she couldn't join them in going to the house and committing the murder.
Convenient.
Yeah. But they wouldn't be going alone because she would conjure five sub-demons to join and protect them. And this promise of the five sub-demons gave Oscar the courage to get it done.
Man.
That is wild that she convinced them.
Yeah.
She had contacted demons, had enlisted the help of five sub-demons to go with them.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah.
Doesn't this kind of sound like it's just a smaller form of a cult, basically?
Totally.
You have this cult leader who can kind of convince the followers of just this dumbest shit.
Yeah. Oscar later told the police that Irenia had them so convinced and motivated that he and David didn't even hesitate that night.
Wow.
That's saying something. So they headed over to the property immediately, and police described the co-conspirators saying, quote, these were amateurs, but they were dangerous.
Right. In other words, these guys are idiots, but
yeah,
clearly they're violent.
They're capable of murdering someone, for sure.
Yeah.
Or being violent.
Oscar's timeline of events matched up with Jackie Jackson's. Oscar borrowed his roommate Misty's car, which ran quieter than his. I think he drove a Mustang. They went to Walmart to buy leather gloves and a ski mask and then headed to the Jackson's house because they had been tracking where Lindsay was. They knew that she would be staying with Jackie that night. Once, so everything, I mean, this screams premeditation. There's no doubt about it. Once Oscar and David arrived at the Jacksons' home, they crawled through an unlocked kitchen window. But another source did say that they actually went in through a door. They wore masks and armed themselves with two knives and cans of pepper spray. According to Oscar, the moment he and David got inside, dogs began to bark, and Jacqueline came out of her room and down the hall into the kitchen. Since it was too dark inside, the men mistook Jacqueline for Lindsay, so they began stabbing her in the dark. So that is the whole problem with this case, is that, one, they're just a bunch of idiots, and they don't know what they're doing, and they don't even get the target of their murder correct, which just, these people are so frustrating and stupid to me. And they just began stabbing indiscriminately in the dark because they thought that Jacqueline was Lindsay.
But weren't they watching the house for days and they didn't figure out there's other people there, and that, yeah, how are we going to make sure we get the right person?
Right. No, these people are
they
morons.
Didn't think that far.
Yeah. These people are absolute morons. Only moments later, Josh comes in. He appears in the kitchen and he immediately defends his mother, which, you know, ended up costing his life, but he did save his mother's life. Then after Jackie came upstairs with the shotgun, both intruders were wounded, with David left on the floor and Oscar fleeing the home. Once Oscar made it back to Irenia's house, he told her what had happened. Then Irenia and Oscar headed to Misty's to return her car. When they arrived, Misty had no clue what was going on, but she had a feeling that something terrible had happened that night. Irene and Oscar used the restroom to grab some bandages and went into the garage, because obviously Oscar was wounded in the leg. Oscar and Irene then left in Oscar's Mustang. After his confession to police, they placed Oscar Eck under arrest and charged him with murder in the first degree, all within 24 hours of the attack. So this is very swift. Police then secured warrants to bring Irene and Jenny back to the station for questioning, and they were brought into separate rooms. Jenny was visibly struggling with what was going on. According to Oscar, she had bailed on committing the murder previously, but she obviously knew about the plan. I mean, it seems like she's a bit complicit, but Sheriff's Deputy Robert Blythe said, quote, "Jenny Wolf never gave me any indication that there was an evil bone in her body. She was very polite. She was chatty." Which I think, I do believe him, but at the end of the day, she knew that these people were planning a murder and did nothing about it. Jenny was open with police and confirmed everything Oscar had confessed earlier. She admitted that Irenia was the only one who actually knew Lindsay personally, but Irenia's power and manipulation had programmed the coven into thinking that this hex was real and that Lindsay truly needed to die. Jenny also emphasized that Irenia had convinced them that everything that had gone wrong in their entire lives, it was not their fault. It was, in fact, this hex. So if they could just kill Lindsay, all their problems would be solved. That's what she got them to believe. And reportedly, Jenny also drove Oscar to the hospital after he fled. Then she disposed of his bloody clothes. So come on, how is that not a co-conspirator, right? In the other interrogation room, police questioned Irenia, and from the others' accounts, police understood that Irenia was the clear mastermind behind the attack. Unlike Oscar, she was very defensive. She denied her involvement over and over again. Sergeant Kelly Hemby told her that, look, everyone's tired and that everyone else had already cooperated. They told them everything they needed to know. So he just pressed Irenia more. He continued to press her and not let up till Irenia finally relented. Within only about 10 to 12 minutes in the interrogation room, Sergeant Kelly Hemby got Irenia to confess and say that she had wanted to kill Lindsay Cassinger. So this was enough for police to contact the state's attorney, and Irenia Kotner was placed under arrest for murder. Misty Gangloff and Jenny Wolf were also arrested and charged with murder as well. 2 weeks after the attack, Jacqueline underwent surgery, and she actually ended up surviving her injuries and was discharged from the hospital 2 weeks later. David Lindner would never face judicial consequences. He remained in a coma until his death in February or March 2006 at the age of 30.
So just based off of all of that, Irenia destroyed so many lives.
So many.
It's just like, it was just so unnecessary, all for selfish reasons.
Yeah.
So who's, you know, in my mind, Irenia is the true, true evil one here, who should face the harshest consequences. But Irenia Cotner's trial began in October 2006. And in opening statements, prosecutors argued that Irenia's motive for killing Lindsay had nothing to do with the hex or the occult. She was just furious and jealous that her ex, Jackie, had moved on. That's all this was.
Yeah.
Unreal. The plan was to murder Lindsay and win back Jackie from the start.
You're absolute idiot.
The hex was only a ruse to convince her co-conspirators to commit the murder for her, and Josh Bennett was killed for defending his mother, who had been mistaken for Lindsay. Jenny, Oscar, and Misty all took the stand and testified against Irenia. They identified her as the ringleader and claimed that she was the one truly responsible for the murder. She had concocted the entire plan. On October 25th, 2006, the jury came back with a verdict. Guilty on all three counts, first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder, and home invasion. And after hearing the verdicts in court, Irenia threw a tantrum and told the judge, "Kiss my ass," as she left the courtroom. She has shown no remorse for her crimes. What a fucking...
yep,
piece of shit. My God. Irenia Cotner ended up being sentenced to 50 years in prison for murder and 7 years for conspiracy, to be served consecutively. The home invasion conviction was vacated, but the judge told her that considering her age and adding 50 years, she'd probably spend the remainder of her life in prison. Patty Metzger, who's Josh Bennett's aunt, said this, "I was kind of happy about that because she shouldn't be out. She took Josh's life, she shouldn't have a life, and she won't," which I 100% agree with that. According to Illinois Department of Corrections, Irenia's current projected release date is August 30th, 2058, when she'll be 87 years old. So who knows if she'll even make it to that. As for Misty Gangloff, she accepted a plea deal for conspiracy to commit first-degree murder in 2006, and she received 7 years in prison, but was released after 3 years. In 2007, Oscar Eck pled guilty to first-degree murder and was given the minimum sentence of 20 years in prison. He is currently on work release custody, is projected to release in August, on August 23rd, 2028. He'll be 61 years old. In 2008, Jenny Wolfe did not plead guilty and chose to go to trial. She was convicted of murder and conspiracy to commit murder and sentenced to 32 years in prison. Her projected release date is September 1st, 2033, and she'll be 48 years old.
So just to put that into perspective, Oscar, the guy who entered the home, got 20 years in prison because he pled guilty.
Right.
Whereas Jenny went to trial, pled not guilty, and she was sentenced to 32 years. She didn't even enter the home. That to me shows how our justice system is a little bit odd, to say the least. I get that, you know, when you plead guilty, you're saving taxpayer money. You know, you don't have to go to trial. You can expedite things, but that doesn't make sense to me at all, really.
No. Good old flaws in the justice system, man.
Yeah.
Irenia obviously did not think her trial was fair and just, or her punishment fit her crimes, so she later appealed her sentence. Among other things, she claimed that the court failed to admit evidence relating to the arson of Lindsay's residence owned by Lee Jackson. According to Misty, Jenny and Oscar had tried to set fire to the house in the spring of 2005. Another source claimed that Irenia sent Jenny and Misty to burn down the house. They poured gas around the home and lit it, but the flame fizzled out. The appeal also mentioned that Irenia believed that David had entered the house on the night of the murder for his own drug-related purposes, which she'd throw all these people under the bus.
Right, yeah.
But of course, these allegations have never been substantiated.
To that point, not that I agree with Irenia in any point of this, but I do, it does raise the question, why was David so quick to agree to this and just go in and then die in the end, to kill someone and die?
I don't know, unless he like had a thing for Irenia or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's really insane to me that
they
just like sign up for this.
Right.
With virtually no gain for themselves.
No.
Other than...
he died.
This hex is, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, he lost everything, literally. So I don't understand how he was convinced so easily. I don't know.
Yeah, it makes no sense whatsoever. After the appeal, the court upheld Irenia's conviction, and her conviction has been upheld through all other appeals since then.
Good.
Yeah. Josh Bennett's funeral was held on August 30th, 2005, and he was buried with military honors in Glenwood Cemetery in Shelbyville. Josh's father, whom he was incredibly close with, had passed away only about a month before him. And Thomas Bennett, Josh's grandfather, died only 2 weeks before him.
Good God.
Ugh. Jacqueline Bennett has remained private about her thoughts on the case, which I don't blame her, because it's just so senseless.
Tragic, yeah.
Tragic. No need for any of this to happen because of just a bunch of dumbasses.
Idiots, man. Just violent, hateful idiots.
So much evil.
And just no idiot. Critical thought crossing any of these people's minds whatsoever. And just the amount of damage these idiots can do, man.
I wonder if are they like sober through all this? Like, you have to wonder. Like,
I did consider that there's maybe some like small town drugs going, meth or whatever. Because
if these guys are sober
doing this,
thinking this, I'm like,
no, I did consider that.
Maybe there's something going on that just wasn't reported, or I don't know.
Yeah, I couldn't find much. I mean, there was some stuff about Jackie that I found, but I don't really think it's related to this case at all. But I would not be surprised if there's some substance abuse going on here.
Yeah, what a just a tragic story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about an extremely manipulative person here that used witchcraft and Wicca to manipulate others.
Yeah.
Knowing that if she says, oh, there's this curse on all of us, we have to do something about it, even though there's in no way, shape, or form, if you look up how to get rid of a curse, does it say kill the person who placed the hex or curse on you?
Right.
Anywhere. There's so many other things that can be done that are effective. If you talk to any real witch about this,
I think obviously we agree that Irenia is the mastermind here, but I mean, at the end of the day, I think everyone who knew about this was complicit. If you did not go to police,
you could have stopped this from happening.
Right.
Could have been like, there's a possibility a lot of people get hurt here.
Absolutely. And the fact that Misty, I think she tries to kind of wash her hands clean of this. If you ever watch interviews of her, any documentaries with her in it, she tries to wash her hands clean. She only got 3 years. She knew that they were conspiring to murder Lindsay for a long time. And I think that's egregious. 3 years. I mean, I hope she feels guilty to this day over what happened, because this is something that could have been so easily prevented. One phone call to police could have shut the whole thing.
Oh, totally. Totally.
I think, yeah.
To not speak up and then have innocent people die for no reason whatsoever is just, yeah, I agree with you. They're all guilty. They all should be in prison still, honestly. It's just, complete fucked up situation. But yeah, let us know your thoughts on this one. Just dumb.
Yeah.
Dumb. Stupid.
Idiots.
It's unfortunate. But we're going to go ahead and wrap up today's episode there. Appreciate you for being here with us. And we'll see you guys next week with another one. Till then, lights out.
Everybody.